Senate lawmakers dramatically change major House bills. That includes measures on taxes, vaccine mandates, and education. Plus, the lottery going online on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 18th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Senate lawmakers significantly scaled back legislation that would have largely prevented private employers from enforcing COVID-19 vaccine mandates. And that prompted several Hoosiers who used to be in favor of the measure to testify against it. The committee made several changes. Perhaps the most significant has to do with religious exemptions to getting the vaccine. Previously, the bill forced employers to honor those requested exemptions no matter what. But now, employers must grant those exceptions based on compliance with existing federal law. So essentially, the bill wouldn't change the status quo. That's not good enough for Hoosiers like Peter Vickery. He says he's been suspended without pay from his job with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And he says the federal standard didn't protect him when he requested a religious exemption from getting the vaccine.
The citizens of Indiana need more. We need protections against the kind of harsh discrimination I've experienced.
But businesses applaud the changes. Carol Auslander represents several local chambers of commerce. They used to oppose the bill, and now Auslander says they're in support.
Government interference in private business is not another thing we need added to our plate. Employers know what is best when it comes to the safety and health of their businesses, employees, and customers.
The bill's future still isn't set. The House author of the bill indicated the two chambers will continue to discuss the measure. What is the future of the vaccine mandate bill? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Lindsay Erdody, WFYI digital editor for Health and Education. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Nikki Kelly wanted me to let everyone know that she is off this week because she's mourning the Bengals' Super Bowl loss, while in actuality she is covering the Indiana Election Commission hearing candidacy challenges today. But Ann Delaney, is where the bill is now the balance that we've been talking about that was needed?
Where the bill is now is where the federal law is. So I guess the answer to that is yes. I mean, all of the people in the House that voted for that ridiculous piece of legislation they put out had a chance to demonstrate their anger and their commitment to letting everybody infect everybody else. And so they've done that. And now it's time to get sensible. And sensible is following the federal guidelines. You can't just walk in like this guy from the symphony orchestra and say all of a sudden you have a religious exemption. You need to be able to show that you have a religious exemption. And you know what? He doesn't need protection. The rest of the orchestra needs protection from him. And it's about time they started realizing that they have an obligation to the people that work closely with them to help keep everybody safe. He obviously doesn't feel that obligation. And I don't feel any sympathy for him. I'd like to see what orchestra would hire him with that kind of an attitude. But I think the balance is better now, certainly, than it was. And it gives the employers the flexibility that the chamber recognizes employers need. They have an obligation to their employees to keep them safe. And this allows them to do so and as safe as possible. And that's a good thing.
Mike O'Brien, same question. We've been talking all along about balance here between individual rights and the rights of a business and an employer. Is this where the bill is now?
I think it's important to remember that the context of vaccine mandates is different sitting here on, you know, the end, middle end of February than it was in the beginning of January. The legislative session began. At the time, there was a federal employer vaccine mandate coming down that the U.S. Supreme Court has since struck down. There were mandates on healthcare workers and others. There were real concerns that vaccine passports and proof of vaccination, those types of mandates were all coming down from the federal government. All that's gone. I mean, if you look around the country, especially as we get into the political season here, you have some of the most liberal parts of the country that had the most stringent COVID restrictions that are lifting mask mandates and doing it as fast as they can to the point where the Biden administration can't really keep up and the CDC's retooling their advice. And part of that is for, yes, Omicron's fading. We didn't know how severe that strain was going to be, you know, a month and a half ago. But when these previous strains faded out. We didn't see the type of activity and movement around the country on removing these restrictions that we're seeing now. And part of that is politics. And there's no other answer for it, that these places that behaved so stringently early on are now all of a sudden finding, you know, individual freedom is the way to go. So the context is important. As this piece of legislation has moved forward, it's important to understand kind of how the world outside of the state house has also changed.
Yeah,
but in those liberal areas, I want to just make one point. In the liberal areas of the country that you're talking about, also overwhelmingly have people vaccinated, and that is another substantial change.
Lindsay, obviously, the legislative process is such that the House obviously passes the bill, the Senate takes its crack at it, and then it will go back to the House and they will hash it out, presumably in conference committee. But these are two kind of polar extremes, and this is not going to be the first time I ask a question like this today. So where do you think, is there more of a middle ground between the two chambers on this, or is it going to, the final product going to look an awful lot like what the Senate just did?
I mean, that is, I think, the million-dollar question, right? It really kind of was this big flip-flop, which we do see from time to time. And like you kind of mentioned, we're going to talk about it on some other bills on the show today, that we've seen big changes between the House and the Senate. And we've heard from leaders that they're working through it. And, you know, this is just all part of the process. And, you know, no need to think that there's, you know, major disagreements between the two houses. But this was a big change. One of the things I'm curious to see if gets tweaked as it goes through conference committee is specifically that language about testing. You know, it seemed like they wanted to give businesses this freedom to have vaccine mandates if they want. The business groups are there really, you know, kind of lobbying lawmakers and trying to get this possibility back. But then they went a step further and amended that testing language and allowed employers now to be able to charge employees for it and increase the frequency of it. So that was just another step of taking more away from the employee side of it, that I'm curious to see if that changes to kind of get more of a little bit of a middle ground and give a little bit more something to employees. But in terms of, you know, who the lawmakers might end up siding with, if it's the employers or the employees, those business groups have lobbyists there day in and day out talking to lawmakers, and your average employee really can't be there day in and day out talking to lawmakers. So, you know, I know people don't want to hear that, and lawmakers would disagree with it to an extent, but, you know, I think the business side of things may end up winning out here.
John, kind of the same question. Where do you think this ends up?
Probably pretty close to what we saw. Where it stands in the Senate with the changes that were made this week, and for three reasons, and I think we've touched on all of them. One, that House Republicans, who were so concerned about this, who insisted on making it their caucus's number one priority, they've had a chance to voice their concern, to go on record saying what a terrible, draconian measure this would have been if employers had been subjected to these employer edicts. So they were able to go on record with that. Number two, the medical climate has changed dramatically, and it's hard to maintain sort of that fervor when you look around and there's the reason for the fervor is sort of dissipated to a large extent. The wind is sort of, you might say, out of the sails. And then I think the Senate position all along, and that actually is the position of the governor as well, is that let's be careful here, because just as the pandemic, as COVID-19 was, as a, we hope, a one-off, it was certainly unprecedented. Do we really want to shift policy that could set precedent in ways that aren't foreseen to deal with this one circumstance, when we may have something that isn't at all related to public health, but still would perhaps erode what has been Indiana's longstanding support of work, of employer rights, and the notion that we are an at-will state? I don't want to use the slippery slope term, but I'm sure there are other scenarios where people could have claimed a religious exemption to, you know, certain types of uniforms, certain types of clothing, certain behavior in the workplace. And I don't think some members in the Senate wanted to risk going down that path.
All right. Well, speaking of the Senate, a Senate committee added language to a tax bill this week that would stop the Hoosier Lottery from adding online gaming without lawmakers' approval. That comes after a report by the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette's Nikki Kelly that the lottery planned to forge ahead on iGaming without legislative action. The 1989 law that authorized the state lottery is pretty broad, giving the Lottery Commission a lot of room to add new games without legislative approval. That apparently includes moving into online gambling. The Journal-Gazette reported that the Hoosier Lottery is already working with its private vendor to do so. Republican Senator Travis Holdman isn't comfortable with that.
We've sent a message to the commission and asked for information on iLottery, what their plans are and where they are in that process. But up to this point, we've somewhat been in the dark about what's going on over there. So we just want to get a handle on it.
Holdman's amendment to a tax bill would require legislative authorization for the lottery to add online games. And he says any discussion of whether to give that approval should take place next year. Mike O'Brien, straight up, is the Hoosier Lottery offering online gaming a good idea for Indiana?
First, we're using two terms interchangeably that are interchangeable. iGaming is the legislature that requires legislative approval of kind of mobile electronic casino games that the legislature would allow casinos to go kind of put out into like sports betting. Those games would run through that casino license. iLottery is strictly the lottery itself going to a mobile or electronic platform. But so the question you just asked, yes, I mean, the future of this, you know, in 1989, you went to the gas station, you parked your car, you put the gas pump in, you walked inside and bought a couple lottery tickets and went home. In 2022, it's becoming ever more likely that your car is plugged in your garage and you buy a lottery ticket on your phone or play a game on your phone. It's one of the reasons that back to iGaming, it's one of the reasons that casinos, where you wouldn't think they support playing casino games at home, they want you in the building. They know that there's a demographic of people that just are never going to do that. They're never going to get in their car and go drive to a facility and do that, because that's just not what consumers want anymore. So the lottery's got to chase this and chase their demographic and their customers and what they prefer. And I don't think the legislature necessarily, there's not, on iGaming, there's no kind of natural opposition to it other than people that just don't like gaming. And iLottery, there might be a loser there in the convenience stores, and something that I think the legislature wants to figure out, which was one of the comments that was made. But, I'll let the lawyers decide what the law allows the lottery to do. But it's, the industry is going that direction. All of our surrounding states have it. And this isn't, you know, a huge policy shift. It's how they do it, I think, that's going to be the debate.
Yeah, Andalini, aside from the question of whether the lottery can do this without legislative approval, which it appears strongly that they can, or that it can, is that a good idea for the Hoosier Lottery?
I think Mike's right about that. That's what the future is. I mean, I don't like seeing all these ads for gaming on television constantly, but that's what's happened. And the legislature gave them the sweetheart tax deal when they let the gaming industry infiltrate Indiana, and you know, why would they be opposed to competition? I don't quite understand that. I mean, it seems to me the lottery is just doing what other entities, or at least it's trying to do what other entities are already doing with legislative approval. And in this case, rather than the profits going to these people who are raking it in by the bushel basket full, it would go to the state of Indiana. And that seems to me to be a no-brainer.
John Schwannis, Mike brought this up, but there is the question of particularly convenience stores who are perhaps crying loudest right now over this issue. How much is the potential harm to convenience stores if you move a lot of the lottery online going to play a factor in what the legislature decides to do?
Well, I can see why that sector of the retail economy would be concerned about it. It probably generates a fair amount of foot traffic in stores. So then we have to shift to the legislature, and which often points out that it is not want to pick winners and losers. Now we know that virtually every bill picks winners and losers to a large extent, but at least we can pay heed, you know, at least note that they do suggest at least that that's an overarching philosophy. But just about every bill, somebody will be hurt and somebody will gain. It's just a constant balancing act. The only other thing I would point out here is that this is part, I think, of an interesting broader trend. It's not as sexy, perhaps, as gaming per se, but just the notion that the General Assembly has grown more and more uncomfortable with the executive branch, with agencies promulgating rules, whether we see it at the Alcoholic Beverage Commission, we see it with the Department of Environmental Management. More and more, it seems like people in the General Assembly are saying, whoa, wait, we know you have that power, but we don't like you making those rules, so we're going to take that over. It's an interesting. I mean, we're not there yet to see when this hits the fan. But at some point, the General Assembly is either going to have to cede back some of that authority, rulemaking authority, to do the fine points of rulemaking, or it's going to have to meet year round just to deal with the volume of rulemaking it has on its plate.
Yeah. Lindsay or Doty, something that Senator Rod Bray talked about this week on this struck me. So he was quoted in Nikki's piece as saying, you know, it seems fine to him. But then he said this week that he's taking more of a look at what sort of options the lottery could be offering online. He was under the impression when he met with the lottery, it would seem, that it was just like the scratch-off game you can buy at the store or a Powerball ticket. But what we see other lotteries that are online around the country offer are things like slot machines and basically the equivalent of Candy Crush on your phone, only, you know, for money. So how much do you think the lottery here was kind of downplaying what they wanted to do to legislative leaders, at least initially?
It's certainly possible they were, you know, we weren't obviously in the room when they were having those discussions, so it's hard to say exactly. But, you know, this is something the lottery has been looking into for several years now. You know, I actually went back, I wrote a story about them exploring this in 2019. They wouldn't really talk about it then, I think, because they didn't really want to draw too much attention to it. But they were looking into it and seeing what their options were. And kind of what you were just saying is that the dozen or so states that have this have different options. Some offer a little bit, some offer a lot more. You know, some require you to do different things to even be able to do it online. Some require you to go into a store to cash your ticket. So that kind of, you know, helps the retailers out a little bit. And so, you know, I think that is something that everyone's kind of waiting to see a little bit more about how this would actually work here. And that's probably why, to Senator Bray's point, why the legislature wants to get involved with it and have a little bit of say about, you know, what this looks like exactly. You know, we saw this when they were expanding sports betting and whether or not to allow mobile sports betting, right? We got really into the nitty-gritty about how exactly that would work. And, you know, all the interested parties wanted to make sure that they would essentially be taken care of during it. You know, and to what Mike and Ann were talking about is that this comes up every time we talk about gambling in the state. And, you know, are we opening Pandora's box and adding one other element to it? But time and time again, the state ends up adding that extra element to it because that's the way everything is moving.
Well, okay, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question, should the Hoosier Lottery offer online games? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, will Mike Pence be the Republican nominee for president in 2024? Just 7% of you believe in the Hoosiers' chances, 93% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Senate lawmakers approved sweeping changes to a controversial school curriculum bill this week. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports many Hoosiers testified that they appreciate the effort, but still have concerns.
The bill no longer requires that teachers post classroom materials online before an annual deadline or that schools create parent-led curriculum committees. It also reworks a section limiting the promotion of divisive concepts along the lines of race, ethnicity, and religion. Many say they still can't support the bill because it requires parent consent for ongoing student mental health support. Lindsay Paisley, a student at Purdue Polytechnic High School, is one of them.
The very same parents that need to give written consent could be the very root of the issue.
The bill also no longer includes an avenue for parents to file lawsuits against schools for violations of the legislation.
John Tronis, I feel like I've asked before on the show who this bill is making happy. Is there anyone left who now likes this bill?
Probably not, which means it's perfect. Perfect as it is, you know. That's the old joke we used to have in journalism, too. You know, if you get the same number of letters from the left and the right saying you're no good and you're a shill for the other side, we must be doing something right. I mean, this is such a hot button issue when you talk about education. It's something that lots of Hoosiers can relate to. So many things that state government does are sort of, yeah, you may have some intersection with them once a year or when you renew a license or, you know, if you're in a certain occupation that intersects with the state government on a regular basis. For the most part, you don't. But yes, education, if you're a student, if you're a parent, if you're a taxpayer concerned about the school in your district, I think there's a familiarity there. And that's one of the reasons why this is so important to a lot of people. This is probably, I think, about the way it's going to end up because of the challenge that was associated with the original the bill as it was the form it was in when it came out of the House. Probably would have been subject to litigation about definitions and not this kind. I know this now the civil penalties are out, but it still would have created litigation about what is defined and not covered by the prohibitions about certain curriculum standards.
Yeah. And exactly to what John's just talked about. If this bill becomes law, is it pretty much going to be in the form it's in right now?
I hope so. I mean, it's clearly a lot better than it was. I'd just as soon not have it become law, frankly. But it's certainly better than it was when it started out. As to the mental health part of that, if all they could, you know, all they need to do is put a bypass mechanism in there, like you do, for example, if a child is seeking medical help or any kinds of things, and the parents don't consent. Having some neutral third party say, okay, you know, you need the mental health counseling and you want the mental health counseling and your parents don't agree, you can go ahead and do it. And that can be fixed. I just assume, frankly, the whole thing died. This really comes down to if you're concerned with what your children are being taught, look at the textbooks, talk to the teacher. If you don't like the teacher or you think the teacher's out of line, go to the principal or go to the superintendent. The mechanism is already there. They've already again showed how angry they are about critical race theory and all this other nonsense that wasn't out there in the first place. So now let this die a natural death.
Mike O'Brien, is the bill pretty much how it's going to look if it becomes law?
I think so. I think that I said a few weeks ago, you had to take this off the teacher's plate, which they've done. The focus has got to be on transparency, which is where they put it. And now it's on the parents to, like Dan just described, the good old days. Go talk to the teacher instead of showing up at the public meeting.
Yeah.
All right. All right. We're on a theme here today. A Senate committee this week gutted the House Republican tax cut package, eliminating every tax cut from the bill. Senate Republicans have long expressed hesitance about the House GOP's mix of business utility and individual income tax cuts that will eventually cost the state more than $1 billion a year in revenue. And so the committee just took out all the cuts without discussion or debate.
Groups who represent local governments and schools applauded the changes. Madison Mayor Bob Courtney says the tax cuts were a real threat to local government funding.
The loss of revenue will have to be shifted to other local property and income taxpayers.
Business groups, however, lamented the removal of the tax cuts. Despite Indiana boasting one of the best business tax climates in the country, Indiana Chamber of Commerce Vice President Bill Waltz says it could be better.
It's an attempt to address some things that have been known to be kind of the few remaining black marks.
Republican Senator Travis Holdman, the committee chair, says discussions on the bill's future will continue and wouldn't rule out some tax cut getting ultimately included.
Lindsay or Doty, despite how pessimistic Senate Republicans have been about tax cuts this session, are you still surprised that they took out every single one?
Not particularly. I mean, I think you can make the argument that these are tax cuts that Republicans would generally support, but to the point you just made, they were never really on board with this from the very beginning. You know, it's not a budget year. They wanted to wait until next year. And, you know, Senator Holdman said something might be added back in, but I would bet if anything, it's going to be a small something because they just don't want to do something major in a non-budget year.
Yeah. Mike O'Brien, what is the middle ground on this one?
Might be kind of half a loaf on business personal property tax, on the state tax credit concept that doesn't affect the locals. I think income tax is off the table for this year. I do love the idea that we don't do any of this for like the next 6 years and pay off our the teacher pension debt, which would be one of the only states in the country that do that. But telling legislators to wait 6 years before they can do something, it's like, why not make it 100 years? We'll do it next century. You know, that's three general assemblies from now and four elections. So I don't see that happening. But I did like the frugal approach that Senator Oldman and Mishler took.
Yeah, and Delaney, would you predict that at least some small tax cut ends up being in the bill by the end of the session?
I hope not. I think this is the fiscally responsible position to take. And that Republicans in the House that are facing primary contests can now say, just like with critical race theory, we voted for all these tax cuts. It's not our fault they're not enacted. So, you know, when you spend $1 billion without any real meaningful debate about what that means to locals, what that means to the state budget, what that means to initiatives to make the state better, it's pretty fiscally irresponsible. So I think I hope they don't do anything this year.
All right. Well, this was a big week at the State House and only a few weeks to go before the end of session. And that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Lindsay Erdody of WFYI. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, and please get vaccinated if you can. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.